Hello and welcome. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. It's the show where I review every science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, just whenever I finish a book, I review it. Actually, it's not always just when I finish a book. I normally leave it a few days and start my next book and sort of think about it for a while and keep reviewing it. And the books can be, anything. You know, any kind of science fiction, any style, anything at all, as long as it's a science fiction novel or something like that. So if you want any more information, just check out the website and the wiki on the website, which is at sfbrp.com, or for all of it in audio form, all the information you need, just check out the SFBRP episode number one. You'll find that on iTunes or anywhere you can find the feed or anything like that at all. So check it out. So the book that I'm reviewing right now, or this episode, is the first in the series of books set in places that I visited or lived or know well in or something like that. So this is a book that's based in my hometown, which is Berlin in Germany. That's where I live. I've lived here about 3 years now. The book is by David Evans, and it was written in 1997, and it's called Time Station Berlin. And anyway, I found this actually not in Berlin. It was down in Australia when I was there in, Darwin, where I found the book. And I saw it there. It really caught my eye, and I thought, this is exactly what I'm looking for. So here it is, Time Station Berlin. It said on the back, don't miss Time Station London and Time Station Paris, the previous books in this all-new series. So it seems like this is the third book in a series of time travel books set in capitals in Europe. I've not read those previous two books, and actually after reading this book, I don't think I will, because, well, let me just get straight into it. First of all, a few disclaimers at the beginning. Like I say, I've lived here for a few years, so I know Berlin pretty well. Also, I worked for about 6 months as a tour guide in Berlin, and I knew lots of history about it before as a tour guide, but you sort of get to know Berlin quite a lot when you work as a tour guide here. So I know a lot of the history and a lot of settings and things like that, probably a lot more than other people my age, Germans, who actually live in Berlin as well, it seems. Yeah, does this book capture Berlin and does it satisfy me as a science fiction book? Well, let me just put it this way, no and no. It's a really, really bad book. So I'm going to keep this review as short as possible here. So the setting of the book is... the setting is like, it's a time travel book, but you don't ever be in, you're never in any time except for 1963. And the whole book takes place in the time that it takes for JFK, John F. Kennedy, to fly into Germany, have a look around Germany, give a speech in Berlin, and then fly out of again. So it's like 2-3 days in 1963. So the time travel element is that there's lots of time travel going on sometimes. Sometimes it's good time travel, sometimes bad time travel. And there's the time wardens, as they're called, in the temporal cores. And their job, actually, I'll just read it from the back of the book, it's their job to protect the timeline from irreparable harm. So if anyone else comes back in time and changes something, it's up to the time wardens to put it right again so the future history carries on as normal and everyone in the future it survives and there's no big paradoxes or anything like that. Now, except for that being said, that's their job, nothing else is explained at all. That someone comes back in time and they're just placed there and it's their job to sort it out. And they get, a warning goes off later in time if anything happens and it's communicated back through to them and they're told what to do. But none of this is actually explained at all or how it works or anything like that. It's just set up that there's these time wardens to stop people fiddling with time. And the time warden in this book is a guy called Spectre. Oh, that's his second name. I can't actually remember his first name because, well... It wasn't mentioned that much. So there's a guy called Spectre, and that's what he's doing, and it's his job. He's the time warden. So the story goes a little bit like this. There's a girl comes back in time, and she meets up with JFK and has sex with him and sort of gets to bed with him. But because she's in bed with him, there's an assassination attempt which was meant to be carried out in a hotel in Berlin, and that goes wrong. It would have been, in the normal course of things, that he would have just been arrested before he got to JFK. JFK would never have known about it. The assassin would have been put in jail, and that's it. And nobody actually really knows about it. But because there was a girl in bed with JFK who wasn't meant to be there, he he managed to get all the way into the room and then sort of escaped, and it's a bit crap like that. But there you go. So what then happens is that JFK knows that he's had this assassination attempt on him by the Soviets. So he decides that he's sick of the Berlin Wall and is going to tear down that wall. That's the idea. So he writes the speech and he makes the speech and he's going to bomb the wall. And of course, this gets back to Spectre through this time gate or time devices that they have. So it's Spectre's job to somehow convince John F. Kennedy not to bomb the Berlin Wall, and because he knows that this is going to start World War III, nuclear bombs dropping all over the place, and that will be the end of not just the world as we know it, but also the future as is known. And that's pretty much the setup into the book. And of course, at the end of it, he does manage to somehow get JFK not to bomb the Berlin Wall, and everything happens as it should happen. So that's pretty much the setup of the story. There's a lot of other crap goes on there. For example, you never actually know how Spectre is going to do this, and he finds out about it like really early on in the morning. But then he just sits at work, just doing nothing really, just doing his work for a good few hours in the morning. And it's just like, oh, I'm really bad. But he works in a... the idea is that he's not allowed to disrupt time at all, and he's meant to have a very, very small impact on time or anything changing. And that's what's stated in the book. That's his job, to stop anything happening in time. But the author, David Evans, has put Spectre's job as a newspaper reporter who works for not just a newspaper, like a local newspaper in Berlin, but a news agency like Associated Press. So he's writing stories which are going to affect the whole world. Everyone, like in the whole English-speaking world, around the world, is reading his stories. Now, if there's one person who does have a massive amount of... or there's one thing that does have a massive amount of influence and impact on the world, that is the media and the mass media, like he's working for. So to put someone in that job was just a non-starter. Can't remember where I was in the story. Yeah, so what he does, he has to find a way of doing it. And his idea is to go over and get someone from East Germany. But again, it's not really explained why he's doing any of that. It's just he does it. Also, I thought this was going to be a time travel book, but time travel has very, very little to do with it. Like I say, none of the technology explained. There's like the whole idea of paradoxes. It's not explained at all. You know, it's all just left out. The only advantage or the only reason why time travel comes into it is because Spectre gets told that JFK is going to bomb the Berlin Wall and it's going to cause a massive disruption in the world, like World War III. The thing is, everyone who isn't a time traveler recognizes this as well. All of JFK's advisors and all of his friends and everyone who talks to him says, no, I'm going to tear, you know, I'm going to bomb this wall. They all say, no, don't do this at all. So everyone's trying to convince JFK, not just this one time travel guy called Spectre. I don't really want to go into it more because it would spoil the book if I told you more, but it doesn't really need spoiling. It's spoiling itself all the way through. The characters... pretty much devoid of any character at all. You know, the only character that I seemed to like and I was rooting for was the Soviet assassin, the guy who's actually doing the assassination attempt. But then he's not just working for the Soviets, he's also working maybe for some other people who went back in time and are saying, you kill JFK now and our stocks will rise in the future and it'll work out that way. Again, it's not really explained very well, and that's just sort of like, that whole idea is dropped after the first few pages. It just gets thrown out. The worst character is actually JFK himself. We keep being told how amazing he is, and he's a great person, and he's got this magnetic and mesmerizing personality. But again, it's that whole kind of, you know, show it, don't tell us. We're told that, but what we really see is this like stupid, like shallow, petty, whining kind of guy. I'm not saying that JFK was actually like that, but that's what we get to see in the book. And he's, you know, it's like he did this and he did that and he was like this and he slept with this person and all. And it's like, I just don't like JFK. That's another reason why I really want the Soviet assassin to succeed in a way, because the way that JFK is written in this book, just very, very unlikable. He like cares more about all the crowds cheering for him as he drives through Berlin. You know, it was an amazing scene, of course, when you see the pictures of it at the time. But it's like he's much more concerned about how much the crowds are cheering for him than him like bombing the wall and maybe setting off at like a nuclear holocaust in that way. He just doesn't seem to care about that. He's more concerned about how much people are cheering for him. So yeah, there's a whole kind of weird stuff going in there. Lots of inconsistencies in the characters as well, and inconsistencies in the book too. For example, at the beginning of the book, Spectre, this time agent, time warden, he's over in East Berlin, and then he just captures this guy who's not meant to be there in time and just takes him back across the wall. No problem at all. He just seems to have the right documents to be able to do this. Later on in the book, he's jumping backwards and forwards across the wall all the time, using different methods. Sometimes he has to break over the wall. Sometimes he gets his sexy assistant to sort of like show a bit of breast to the guards, and he manages to get through that way. Other times he pretends that somebody is different, and you know, it's just inconsistent. There's no reason for him to be going backwards and forwards across the city all this time. For example, his plan to get Kennedy to do something different, it's like his plan isn't outlined. He just randomly goes for a wander across the wall, and it's like, what shall I do now? Oh, I could really do with a drink. And again, he's got like 8 hours to save the world, to save not just this world, but the future as well. And he just goes, oh, I could really do with a drink. And he goes into this bar, and he sits down to have a drink, and randomly these people he knew before come in. It's like, aha, now I have a plan. But there's no reason for him to even be there or to go in the bar at all. Very, very strange thing going on there. So how well does this book really portray Berlin? Is it good portrayal of Berlin by reading this book? Do you get to know the history and everything about Berlin? Not at all. It's literally, I'm reading this book thinking, David Evans has never been to Berlin. Not only that, he's never seen any pictures of Berlin. He's never looked at a map of Berlin. He's never read any history books about Berlin or anything at all there. For example, not only does he can he flip backwards and forwards across the Berlin Wall, he just takes it in his stride, just go backwards and forwards. At the end of the book, okay, the situation is this. He's got 1 hour, this is Spectre, to save the world. And he does this all in 1 hour. First of all, he decides to drive from his newspaper office in West Berlin, where we're never actually told where it is, but just generic West Berlin office somewhere. And he has to drive down to Checkpoint Charlie, across Checkpoint Charlie, which, you know, doesn't take no time at all. And then he drives to a hospital, and the nearest hospital to Checkpoint Charlie is quite a distance away, but, I mean, I'm not sure how close the nearest hospital was back in 1963, but there you go. So he drives to a hospital, and it's a guarded hospital, and there's Stasi guards around it, you know, but they're never actually mentioned in the book. It's always just generic guards and stuff. So there's generic guards around there, and he gets into the hospital, goes up to a sealed, like a guarded room ward in it, and then he meets a man, this wounded man that he's promised to take back across the wall, and then gets him from the bed, sneaks him out of the hospital, gets shot at, gets him into a car, then drives from the hospital back to Checkpoint Charlie, which again, quite a long way. By the time he's got there, there's not been any like emergency going out on the radio or anything like that saying, hey, there's somebody been stolen from this hospital, let's shut down the borders and keep an eye out for these people. No, that's when he bluffs his way back through Checkpoint Charlie, which, you know, isn't possible. I mean, it could have been possible, but you just didn't do it. There was somebody laying on the back seat, and they just managed to bluff their way through, and the guards don't ask, hey, who's that guy on the back seat? Whereas in 1963, you know, that just would not have happened at all. West Berliners were not allowed across the Berlin Wall at that point at all. So then he gets through there. Then he drives from Checkpoint Charlie all the way to Free University, which is a journey of about maybe 15 kilometres, probably more than that. I don't know, but that's the kind of like journey we're looking at. And again, he's got less than an hour to do all of this. And this is on the day that JFK is going around the town, which means that there must have been crowds everywhere. But somehow, Spectre, he manages to drive there. Then when he gets to the Free University, he manages to locate where Kennedy is, bluff his way past the guards around Kennedy, get into Kennedy's inner circle, then convince Kennedy not to bomb the wall. And he does all of this with 10 minutes to spare. He does all of that stuff in 50 minutes. And again, if you know Berlin at all, or if you even look at a map of Berlin at all, you'd know that that's just completely impossible. If you know anything about the setup of the Berlin Wall or the checkpoints or anything at all, or even about, you know, presidential security, again, I don't know how good it was back in 1963, but to do all of that in under an hour, just completely, utterly unbelievable. The reason he goes across to save this guy or to get this guy out of hospital, he says, is just because I promised to get him out, you know, because there's this escape attempt that went bad earlier on in the book, earlier on in the day. But it seems like to get this guy out of hospital is just as important as to stop the Third World War. But, you know, it's not explained at all. There's no motives for him to do that. It's just sort of like some like fast-paced adventure at the end of the book. And when the way that he actually gets Kennedy not to bomb the Berlin Wall has got nothing to do with time travel. All he does is use his logic and then actually gets this injured East German person to ask Kennedy not to do it. And that's all it takes finally Kennedy just agrees not to bomb the Berlin Wall. And, you know, and that was the only time when, like, Kennedy shows any kind of compassion or any feeling for the people of Berlin at all, except for, hey, I like them when they cheer for me, and that's about it. So, yeah, it's just full of just really stupid, unbelievable, just farcical situations. And then, of course, there's the historical inaccuracies of the Berlin Wall itself and of set in Berlin. Like I say, you know, he's never even seen a picture of the Berlin Wall. For example, there's this escape attempt to get across the Berlin Wall, and a truck slams into the wall, but it doesn't break through. But in 1963, there was no version of the wall which was more than maybe sort of a brick wall and a barbed wire fence, and a truck could have just gone straight through it. And even if there was a section which a truck wouldn't have been able to drive through, which, again, you wouldn't aim for that bit, you'd just aim for the barbed wire fence just a bit away. Even if there was a section that the truck couldn't withstand, then what they do, they climb on top of the truck and then throw a rope ladder up over the Berlin Wall and then climb up onto the top of the ball, past the barbed wire, and then jump down the ladder down the other side and then climb down the other side. And the Berlin Wall, I mean, it's nothing like the Great Wall of China. It's not that big. It's only maybe 12 foot high at the highest point. Less than that even, I guess. And also there's no mention of the Death Strip, which is that there was actually two fences or two sort of walls around West Berlin, and the part in between of sort of like 50 to 100 metres in between these two walls is known as the Death Strip, just completely left out of this book as well. And also the guards at one point, that they go, oh, at one point there's, you know, they're driving this truck and they want to get to a point where there's no guard towers, but the thing is, on the Berlin Wall, at every point of the wall there was a guard tower or a guard station, so at least two guard stations would be able to see all of the Berlin Wall at one time and would be able to shoot people getting across. And then these guards, they go, oh, we don't want to shoot these people because they want to avoid paperwork. Whereas in fact, the guards got bonuses and promotions for shooting at people trying to escape East Berlin into West Berlin. So that, you know, it's all just, this is just stuff off the top of my head, you know, things I already know, and I don't have to look any of this stuff up. And other examples, it says that the Russian troops erected the Berlin Wall, which is just completely rubbish. You know, even the very first wall was put up by East Germans. And then, you know, there's the whole Ich bin ein Berliner. Paula, sorry, my girlfriend here. What does Ich bin ein Berliner mean?
I am a Berlin person.
Can it mean I am a jam donut? It can mean that. But the point, but not in Berlin. This is the whole point. But it's this just this... Yeah, I'm a pancake, you know, ich bin ein Pfannkuchen. And the point is that this is like an urban legend which has come up after this speech. Ich bin ein Berlin only means I am a Berliner. Ich bin ein Berliner, sorry, not ich bin ein Berlin. It's like saying I am a Brazilian or I am Brazilian. They both mean the same thing, and it's only someone who's got like a really weird mind who would get confused about what a Brazilian actually is. So yeah, Germans are not confused by that. It's all the urban legend. And there's also this thing about like is it Adenauer, the Prime Minister, the Chancellor here in Berlin, in Germany, he just says, oh, I want to, you know, help attack the Berlin Wall with Kennedy. The thing is, there were no West German troops in Berlin back then because they weren't allowed in West Berlin. It was an occupied city, and they weren't allowed, you know, they weren't allowed to have East Berlin, East German troops in East Germany, in East Berlin as well, but, you know, they were allowed then. Well, they weren't allowed, but East Germans did that what they wanted. You know, the capital of East Germany was not allowed to be East Berlin, but, you know, East Germans did that anyway. So, you know, like I say, not only does David Evans not have a clue about history or the geography or the politics or anything out about the city, he just misses out any descriptions of East Germany or West Germany or West Berlin or anything at all. It's just all completely, utterly generic. So because of all of this, because it's just so badly written, I didn't even go into how badly written this book was. For example, you know, JFK is, you know, he's thinking about who is there. Ah, and there's that person, then that's the person. And he names his sisters, but he doesn't just name his sisters. It's like he names them, giving them like all four names that they had. I can't remember what the names are now, but it's just, you know, just time and time again, I'm just reading this book cringing. Actually, I was having a good conversation with a friend of mine the other day, and he was talking about putting together a juggling act, because like I say, I'm a juggler, and we watched this show, and there was this one act which was terrible, and he said, this is actually quite inspiring to watch this act, because it's so bad, it just makes me show that it doesn't matter how bad I do, I know I'm not going to put together the worst act. And that really makes me feel good about any fiction that I'm ever going to write or I ever have written, because I just know it can't be as bad as Time, Station,
Berlin. So that's why this book gets 0.5 stars out of 5, meaning never read it at all. Never, ever read it. It doesn't get 0 out of 5 stars because to get that, you know, I don't think I could... I think I have to not finish a book at all, but I did actually read through to the end of this book because it's only 266 pages, as I say, flicking to the back of the book there. So yeah, avoid it like the plague. Really, you'll never have to read this book at all. Maybe Time Station London is good because it sets up the situation, but like I say, this is a sci-fi book with no science in it and very, very bad fiction. So next week, I'm going to continue in my... next episode, I'm going to continue in my theme of books about places, science fiction books about places that I lived in or visited. And so I'm going to do Antarctica by Kim Stanley Robinson, because I went to Antarctica recently, which is pretty cool. I said actually a while ago that I'd do the book Glide Path by Arthur C. Clarke, but I've lost the book. I think it must be somewhere here in the office or in the bedroom or downstairs or something like that, but I can't find it at the moment. So keep sending in the emails, and that's luke@juggler.net, or check out the wiki at sfbrp.com. Otherwise, thanks a lot for listening. Sorry I went so long on a really bad book, but I guess it happens now and then. See you later.